History at Hand, revision at your fingertips. Why did the League of Nations fail? In order to answer this question, we must look at the background to the League of Nations failure and try and explain whether or not we think the League of Nations was crippled at birth and therefore doomed to failure. Or was it the fact that they were unable to deal with the challenge from Japan in Manchuria and then the challenge from Italy in Abyssinia, which finally put paid to the League of Nations? This podcast comes in three parts. First, we'll explore whether or not the League was an impossible task. Next, we'll look at Manchuria, and finally Abyssinia. The last part, we'll look at the implications of the League's failure. So, was the League of Nations really crippled at birth? The absence of the United States of America from the League was obviously a bitter blow, but that did not necessarily mean that the League was doomed to fail. Without the United States, the League of Nations lacked the universality, that moral sense that everyone was involved. As a result of that, it was a League of some nations rather than the League of Nations. Therefore, other countries could leave it too. On top of American absence, Germany, Japan, Russia, and Italy were also not members at various times. As a result of that, it also meant that the responsibility for controlling the League rested on France and Britain, who had concerns of their own. It is often argued that their self-interest was responsible for the League's failure. They put their own priorities first, Britain and her empire, France and her need for security against Germany. As a result of that, the League was led by people not fully willing to commit to its project. The League was also lumbered by the fact that it had to uphold the treaties of the Paris Settlement, Versailles in particular, and many people, especially by 1930, had seen these treaties as being rather bankrupt. To maintain these treaties was seen as being unjustifiable, yet the League would have to do it. Again, this made people question the League's authority. When the League was called to take action, there were significant flaws in the way it handled disputes. For a start, the League was slow to react to events, as we'll see in Abyssinia and Manchuria. The League had no military presence of its own and would rely on its members. Why would countries be willing to send their troops to fight and die in far-off countries when their own particular interests are not at stake? Economic sanctions, therefore, rested as the ultimate tool which the League could use. And without everyone being a member of the League and therefore willing to support these sanctions, these economic limitations were easily gotten around by aggressive powers. This was particularly true after the Wall Street crash sent the world into depression in the 1930s. Countries wanted trade, and to restrict it would restrict their ability to find their own people jobs. The League's first big test came in 1931, when the Japanese occupied the Chinese province of Manchuria. Japanese aggression started with what is called the Mukden Incident, where it is alleged Chinese soldiers sabotaged the South Manchurian Railway. Japanese used this as the excuse to occupy not just the railway and its surrounding area, but the whole province of Manchuria. As the Japanese army consolidated their hold on Manchuria, the Chinese authorities asked the League of Nations for help. So why did Japan do this? One has to look at the fact that Japan considered themselves to be the greatest power in the East Asian region and were flexing their muscle. Within Tokyo, military factions had taken over the running of civilian government in many respects. Japan had suffered a great deal as a result of the Depression. They'd lost many of their markets, especially for goods with America. As a result of that, they needed to be able to find markets for their products. They also needed its raw materials. And Manchuria had farmland, it had coal, plentiful supply. The Japanese had also had a significant economic presence in the region for many years previously. They had controlled Korea since 1910, the southern border of Manchuria, and their economic influence had spread well into the interior of this province of China. The League told the Japanese to withdraw straight away. The Japanese government seemed cooperative and claimed it was the action of military hothead, but as the months rolled on, Japanese consolidation of what they now called Manchukuo got stronger, even to the stage of putting a puppet ruler, Puyi, the former Chinese emperor, on the throne of the new province. The League then sent a commission of inquiry under Lord Lytton, the Lytton Commission, all the way to China, to examine who was at fault, who was the aggressor, and what action should therefore be taken. The League should have taken strong action, as this was a clear breach of collective security. One member of the League of Nations had been attacked aggressively by another. Yet, as we are seeing, the League wanted to slow down the process and make sure that military action on their behalf wasn't carried out. In the atmosphere of the Great Depression, no countries could resist the restriction on trade that going to war against Japan might provide. The Lytton Commission reported back in October 1932. It tried to satisfy both sides, telling the Japanese to withdraw, but to make Manchuria a semi-independent province rather than being directly ruled by Peking. Attempts to provide a solution by the League proved fruitless. Japan indeed left the League of Nations in 1933 and went on to occupy further parts of China, the Jehol province that year, and then from 1937, attacking Shanghai and other parts of mainland China. The League acted ineffectively in this case. It had proven itself to be weak and unable to follow upon its principles of collective security. Other aggressor powers, Italy and Germany, looked on and saw that maybe the League would take no action if they acted in such a way too. The League claimed that the Manchuria crisis was a one-off incident, that it was caused by the specific problems of that region and also by the Great Depression, which was biting its hardest in 1931. The real test then came over Abyssinia in 1935. Benito Mussolini, the Italian dictator, believed that his authority and his popularity would rest upon a success in foreign policy. He cast himself out as the new Roman emperor, able to create a new Italian empire around the Mediterranean and in Africa. The only part of Africa still left outside European colonial authority was Ethiopia, or Abyssinia, which was ruled by its emperor, Haile Selassie, the Rastafari. Italy was already in possession of Libya, Eritrea, and Italian Somaliland. They had a history of trying to gain authority over Ethiopia, but in 1898 were humiliatingly defeated by the Ethiopian forces at the Battle of Adowa. Mussolini was keen to avenge this humiliation on Italy. In December 1934, a border clash at the oasis of Walwal left 30 Italian troops dead. This was Italy's precursor for a military build-up and eventual invasion, which started in October 1935. The League was slow to act and could have taken more decisive action even before invasion took place. But the problem was, Mussolini was a potential ally in Europe against Hitler, and as a result of that, it was very difficult to do anything which would put Mussolini in a resentful mood towards Britain and France. The Italian invasion was very, very successful. Using aeroplanes, using chemical weapons, modern technology was clearly victorious over the Ethiopians' bravery. Haile Selassie appealed for help straight away from the League of Nations. The League of Nations was determined to take strong action after the failure with Manchuria. Italy was deemed the aggressor, and economic sanctions were imposed against her. Unfortunately, those sanctions were not as robust as they could be. It took 6 weeks for them to actually be enforced. They didn't include coal, they didn't include oil, they didn't include steel, all of which were vital in pursuing the war. The fact that Germany, Japan, and the United States were not willing to back up these sanctions made them even more prone to failure. More significantly still, Britain and France did not sanction the closure of the Suez Canal to Italian shipping. This would have made it very hard for the Italians to be able to supply their troops in Ethiopia, and could have been a way of achieving success against them. Even worse, Britain and France made their own negotiations with Italy behind the scenes of the League of Nations and without consultation with Haile Selassie. In December 1935, the Hall of Alplan was leaked. It proposed to give Italy most of Ethiopia, but to keep a part of it independent. This outraged British public opinion, and Sir Samuel Hoare, the Foreign Secretary, was forced to resign. As the economic and diplomatic efforts to end the war in Abyssinia failed, Mussolini was able to achieve great victory, and to make the King of Italy also the new emperor of Abyssinia. In 1936, the League was seen to have clearly failed. It had failed in its primary purpose, the resistance of aggression. This was down to a combination of slow decision-making, ineffectual sanctions, the self-interest of its leading members, Britain and France, but also because it didn't have enough military presence. It was tied to the treaties of Paris, and also no America, no Germany, no Italy, Japan and Russia at other stages meant it could never fully represent all nations. The failure of the League to stand up to aggression left the world again on the brink of an abyss. Hitler, never slow to seize an opportunity, saw how weak the League was and took action to reoccupy the Rhineland. The tone was set for future aggression, which no collective security could deal with.